Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Jason, we have our SmackDown Post-Royal Rumble edition in the rearview mirror, and the show closed with a pretty intense angle for SmackDown, hyping up Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn one-on-one next week. Winner gets a title shot against AJ Styles. This was the week where Daniel Bryan seemed like, well, I guess it's more ambiguity. Was he on KO and Sami's side by giving them a title shot, which Shane and Baron Corbin seemed to disagree with? Or was he acting in a way to try to get them to turn on each other and create tension, which is certainly what happened in the end. What do you think of the way things played out between those two and Daniel Bryan on today's program?
It's interesting. I think it kind of leans towards the latter of what you just said, where it seems as though he knew exactly what he was doing when he set this match up. And it certainly seems like they're going in the direction of, I don't know if it's a temporary split or if we're seeing the beginnings of a permanent split between Owens and Zayn, but they've created a little bit of drama between the two of them.
I was interested in watching Sami Zayn's body language and the confidence that he had in the way he carried himself when he was standing up to Kevin Owens and walking away from him. And then when he came back and slapped him in the chest, and then when he talked to Renee Young at the end of the show, this was a different Sami Zayn than we've seen as the happy-go-lucky, positive, outgoing babyface and the subservient buddy to KO, buttering him up and being overly complimentary. I thought this was a side of Sami I hadn't seen. Now, I don't think this is long-term, but it's interesting and maybe eye-opening to see that he's capable of this on the main roster.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't think it's permanent. I'd like to think that it's just a product of him wanting to sort of preserve himself before the mixed match challenge. I thought it was a little unfair to put him in back-to-back matches like that tonight, since he did have a match with Braun Strowman coming up. But no, I mean, it's a side of him we haven't seen certainly in some time. You know, normally he comes out there, he's kind of bouncing up and down, he's all jovial, and they went sort of in the opposite direction tonight. And again, I don't think it's a permanent split. I think they're teasing something that in the end may not actually manifest and happen. But it was interesting just to sort of tease that dissension. I mean, we've seen these two wrestle so many times, but it's been a while. You know, they've had this alliance now for a number of months. To see some cracks in the armor, I think, is a new little wrinkle that they've thrown into the story.
It is, and I think that matches that we've seen before become fresh again when the wrestlers fighting each other are in a new place. They've been on a journey, and now the dynamic is different. I don't see this as long-term either. I think we're going to end up seeing a finish that might lead to tension for a little while, or maybe a reconciliation, but they're not breaking them up permanently. But I think they did a good job on this show creating the impression that next week, if you've been looking for these two people who are just insufferably good friends, and no, it's the KO show, no, it's a Sami show, I think fans are going to anticipate seeing them fight it out and maybe break up. I think longtime fans know better than that. But I thought it's in terms of building up a match for next week's show, I thought they did a really nice job with this.
Yeah, I agree. I think they did as well. And it's kind of funny for you and me to be sitting here talking about how it's kind of unique that, you know, they built up this tension between the two, considering that from the moment they came up to the main roster, I guess even going back to NXT, they've been mortal enemies. And so they've been able to, and I think keeping them together for all these months, they've been able to freshen things up a lot to where now that we're sort of headed back to this place where they may be butting heads, it almost seems fresh. Whereas, you know, 5 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, I would have called you crazy if you would have said that.
Absolutely, yes. Let's take care of business here and introduce ourselves. I'm Wade Keller. I'm joined by Jason Solomon, known as the Solomonster of the Solomonster Sounds Off podcast. And this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following SmackDown on Tuesday, January 30th, 2018. And you have found us on our new feed for the post shows. Tomorrow we'll record, but Thursday on the Thursday flagship, we'll be at Podcast One with Todd Martin from the VIP show The Fix as my co-host to talk about just Magnificent weekend of pro wrestling. What a weekend, Jason. I mean, the NXT TakeOver special, a couple big New Japan shows with big matches and angles, the Royal Rumble, a big Raw, the Ronda Rousey news, and a good addition of SmackDown here too, I thought, which we'll get into more and almost exclusively as we continue on the program here. What a weekend, though, isn't it? Hasn't it been? I mean, this is one of the, especially if you've been in Philly going to all these events, one of the great wrestling weekends.
Yeah, I think you might have been a little bit more impressed by SmackDown than I was, but just going back to Saturday between TakeOver, Royal Rumble, and Raw last night, yeah, I'm going back in the memory bank. It's been a while since I think we've had this strong of a weekend of consecutive WWE shows, because normally, you know, you have those TakeOver shows, the main roster is sort of hit or miss when it comes to the pay-per-view the next day. But they've had as good, I think, a combination of shows as we've seen in a long time, which is good because you want that momentum going into WrestleMania.
Absolutely. And when I say a good SmackDown, I do want to qualify a little bit. I'm not hedging on my opinion of it, and we'll talk about the finer points of it. But relative to the last 2 to 3 weeks, this was a home run because and there's irritating things about it. But I thought the show was just listless the last 2-3 weeks, and at least some stuff happened that we can talk about. It's been a little bit of a challenge lately following SmackDown to have a lot of talking points. We have some talking points here, good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of the main storyline. I like the progression of the Owens and Zayn story. Now, we know we have AJ and Nakamura on a collision course for WrestleMania, assuming, you know, AJ can hold on to the championship between now and then. But in terms of the rest of the show, I mean, you said, you know, you mentioned the word listless. I think in terms of almost everything else that happened tonight, that's a good word to describe it. But I think you and I are in sync as far as the main story goes.
Absolutely, yep. Now, we are streaming live our caller portion of the program here, and if you're on hold and want to join the program and comment on anything Jason and I are saying as we continue to talk about the program, push 1 on your Touchstone phone. That'll move you from standby to the caller queue. And if you haven't called in yet, but you're listening to our live stream at WadeKellerPostShow.com, then you can call us. And the number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We'll be doing a live caller stream after Raw and SmackDown many weeks. Not every show, but most weeks. We'll probably reintroduce this format. This was what we used to do back before the move to Podcast One just over 6 months ago. So we'd love to hear from some of you and introduce your thoughts and reaction to the show in the conversation that Jason and I are having. Jason, the follow-up for Shinsuke Nakamura's Royal Rumble win I thought was vital. I thought it was one of the big stories going into this show is would they make Nakamura seem like a bigger star than he has seemed the past few months? Not that they were burying him, but can they do something to portray him as a rock star, not just as a nickname, but in how he carries himself and how he comes across? How did they do and how did he do tonight? How do you grade them in that regard?
It's kind of a wash, I think, from where I am. Honestly, you know, when I look at the two Rumble winners, I think they did a better job with Asuka last night in terms of her coming across as being a bigger deal. But, you know, again, we'll see in the weeks to come. I think the jury is out as far as how fans sort of view him and how they position him. Yeah, he came out at the beginning of the show. He had the promo, which really, you know, was pretty brief to the point. I was very curious when he got to the name AJ Styles, how the crowd would react. He was running down all these names from the Rumble, people he kneed in the face, and they would cheer. You know, when he mentioned Roman Reigns and John Cena, naturally people would cheer. And I was very curious how they would react when he mentioned AJ. And he got a nice response, but it was a little mixed, which I think is probably what we could expect going into the match of WrestleMania. But then in terms of what they did, you know, in the main event, you know, he nailed the Kinshasa, got the pin in the end. So I think they did a fine job. I'm more curious how they follow up in the weeks to come and what his role is at the next pay-per-view. That's really what I'm curious in.
What would you do in the next couple months to get Shinsuke at that level of megastar? And do you have any specific ideas that have worked in the past for somebody who hasn't headlined a WrestleMania before, but being in that spot now as one of the, you know, 2, 3, 4 headline matches, depending on how the card fills out? What can they do with the Shinsuke character? Limited English, unlimited charisma, great resume, but not a resume that necessarily the people who make WrestleMania a huge success, that next layer of fans who pay attention periodically but not always, what can they do?
Well, I mean, I mean, the one thing is I would hope they keep him, you know, dominant going into Mania. I wouldn't want to see him losing in any sort of big match situations. I think it would be kind of interesting if, you know, we saw him and AJ team up tonight for the first time, I believe the first time, certainly if not the first time in a while. I'd like to see them start going tit for tat, where maybe they do some more tag team matches, or they're just involved in these situations where they're trying to one-up each other. Because they both have pride, you know, in their work, and they want to prove that, you know, they're better than the other guy. So maybe they can come up with some clever situations where they're kind of going, you know, tit for tat. And that's one way to build up to their match at WrestleMania, the whole theme being, you know, who the better man is, you know, who's the better performer, who's the better wrestler. In terms of a specific thing, when it comes to his talking, that's the one thing, you know, his weakness, I think, is his talking. You know, he can talk in small doses. We're used to seeing guys go out there and sort of be given 10, 15 minutes, or sometimes they'll do like a face-to-face type situation. I don't honestly know how he's going to do in that situation. Even tonight, he was somewhat limited in what he was saying. You know, his English is okay. I wouldn't, you know, call it great.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I'm interested in how they do going forward with both he and Asuka. So we have situations that sort of mirror each other on Raw and SmackDown, which I find really interesting right now. You have two Japanese stars whose, you know, their first language is not English, and they're working for a company that going into the biggest show of the year, I mean, let's be honest, this is a company that largely relies on people's verbal skills. You know, they have to be able to go out there and talk, and it's going to be very interesting, I think, over the next 6 or 8 weeks, you know, what they do with them. Do they sort of hide them in a way and find other ways to highlight them? Or are they going to have them out there in a sink or swim situation where they're going to have to speak? Do the crowds, you know, turn against them in a way? Or that's kind of what I'm interested in seeing. But if I'm them, I try to find ways to not put him out there for too long on the microphone. I try to find other ways to try to highlight what people like about him.
And I thought tonight it was well done. I thought that when Nakamura first arrived and AJ was kind of showing him around, I thought Nakamura seemed a little too the analogy I used was the man in the yellow hat showing Curious George how the world works. And Shinsuke was the cute character who didn't really understand and couldn't speak. And the man in the hall that was showing him around. And I didn't think it was a flattering way for Shinsuke to be portrayed, and I thought he was too childlike in his wide-eyed reaction to this WWE universe. I think that this dynamic was better in that Shinsuke kind of was messing with AJ a little bit, and I thought that was a fun exchange where Shinsuke just said, well, what's our strategy tonight? And Shinsuke goes, I will beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania in his broken English. And he repeated that a couple times. And AJ's like, are you just messing with me or do you not understand me? And Shinsuke laughed and said, I'm just messing with you. Just follow my, and then he basically said, follow my lead out there. I like Shinsuke acting like the alpha and being smart enough to kind of mess with AJ a little bit. So they're off to, I thought, a good start in that regard, working within the limitations of Shinsuke on the mic. The thing is AJ is not stone cold on the microphone. He's not John Cena or The Rock on the microphone. He's good. But this is going to be a challenge for AJ, too, if he's going to have to carry the majority of the promos. We got 2 months to fill between now and presumably AJ and Shinsuke. I think people will be let down if that match doesn't happen now, obviously, because of a title change in the meantime. So this is just a fun story to watch, to see what AJ, Shinsuke, and the whole creative team come up with to not have the match feel anticlimactic or their personalities worn out by the time we get to that match.
Yeah, and if anything, I'd like to see maybe a harder edge from Nakamura. I mean, he's a very charismatic guy. When we see him in the ring, he's got all these mannerisms, and he can be kind of funny. But I'd like to see, if anything, them maybe highlight more of his just a harder edge with him, whether that means he gets a little more physical in his matches. Maybe they do some sort of face-to-face with him and AJ at some point, get them in the ring together. And you know, do something in that regard where they come to blows. Something along those lines is what I personally would like to see. But you're right. I mean, these are not two guys who are well known for lighting it up on the microphone. They're known for just the opposite. You know, people think to the match they had in New Japan, or they think to some of their other big matches. These are guys that are known for being able to go in the ring
So when you poll people, what match are you most looking forward to at WrestleMania? A lot of people would say this match, but it really, I think, boils down to their work in the ring. But you've got a lot of time to kill, right, between now and New Orleans. So what do you do? That's why I said before, the whole tit for tat thing. I think maybe the two of them just trying to show each other up, sort of like a beat their chest macho kind of thing. And at some point it comes to blows. But with Shinsuke, a little less maybe of the, I don't know, the mannerisms and sort of the jokey type stuff that maybe we see sometimes. And because we know this guy, we've seen him in the past. He can be, he's not somebody you want to mess with. I don't think we've really seen that side of him yet in WWE. I'd like to see them show a little bit more of that.
I'm with you. An edge to Shinsuke where there's, I wouldn't say sinister, but a sinister side of him, but a side of him where it seems like there's more going on than the kind of happy-go-lucky demeanor that he's put forth so far. I want to hear about the mission that he's on, and that he's on a mission to become champion, and that he might put on a smiling face, but there's a serious athlete and competitor who wants this championship badly.
Yeah, and just to make the larger point, I get emails sometimes from people who listen to my show who aren't really familiar with his work in Japan, who say, "What's the big deal with this guy?" Yeah, he can be kind of funny and he's got charisma and personality, but there's a side of him that a lot of people, I think, in this country who are not familiar with his work in Japan haven't seen. If they could find a way to tap into that and sort of expose people into why this guy is so dangerous, I think that would go a long way.
Should they do that before WrestleMania in a showcase matchup, or would AJ Shinsuke be a good chance for Shinsuke to have a coming out party in terms of that level of work?
No, I'd like to see it happen before WrestleMania, and it might just be as simple as putting him in some matches on TV where he starts to show that harder edge. I think they should show that going into the match at WrestleMania, because it adds a whole other dynamic to the match of, hey, this is not somebody to be trifled with. This is not, we could have the games back and forth, but he's a dangerous man. And if you do that, it sort of adds a whole other layer, I think, to the match.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to our first call. And a reminder, if you're on hold in the caller queue and you want to join us, just push 1 on your Touchstone phone. If you're streaming us live at WadeKellerPostShow.com, you can call us. The number should be on the screen, but it is 347-215-8558. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jason Solomon from the Solomonster Sounds Off podcast. And we'll go to our first call. This looks like an international call, 6140. If you heard a tone, you're on live. What is your name? Where are you calling from?
Well, hi, Wade and Jason. It's Jason calling from Australia.
Hey, Jason. The tradition continues. Thanks for joining us. What have you got for us? Jason is an occasional co-host on this show, too. It's a Jason fest.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sorry. I think you're overdoing your quotas. I think you're overdoing your quotas on Jason. I might have to change my name because every week you seem to have another Jason on.
Yes. Well, no Powell this week, so at least that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I was listening to your guys' conversation, and, I was just thinking about Nakamura. What I would really like to see, I'd like to see Jim Ross conduct a sit-down interview with Nakamura, like he did with, Mankind and Goldust back in the day, to really flesh out more of his character. I think Jim Ross, that credible voice to sit down with, and he could also do it with AJ Styles, but, I'd like to see Jim Ross just go through with Nakamura, his whole journey since he started in WWE, and remind people that, Nakamura, and keep it from a storyline in-ring point of view, that, Nakamura did get two clean victories in the space of about 3 to 4 weeks over John Cena and Randy Orton, and re-emphasize that. But also talk about that he did come up a bit short against Jinder Mahal, and even ask Nakamura, what did you learn from that? And I think they might want to tie up that loose end and even like have Nakamura get that clean victory over Mahal on TV. But I think just having JR ask him some questions, JR talking about that he's never seen anyone like as charismatic and what he can bring to the table, and have Nakamura feed off that, I think that might be a nice little feature. And if you do the same with AJ Styles, I think that's a really good way to build into that match.
Jason Solomon, what do you think of that?
It's not a bad idea. I don't even know that you necessarily need Jim Ross to be the one doing it. I think somebody like Corey Graves could probably be more than capable in that role. I like the whole idea of doing the sit-down interview. Again, it isn't necessarily Shinsuke's forte, but if it's sort of a relaxed environment, he's not in promo mode, they're just sort of speaking one-on-one, it could be interesting to get his insights. I mean, in a perfect world, honestly, in a perfect world, they would be able and willing to highlight at least some of his background in Japan. It's kind of weird because he came over here with such fanfare and they build him up as being such a big star. But the whole reason that he's a big star and has this whole aura about him is because he became a star in Japan. But they don't really talk much about his background because that's just not what they do. They sort of allude to it, but they don't show still photos. They don't really go into depth about the people he's competed against. I certainly wouldn't expect them to mention the fact that these two have had a match before. In a perfect world, I think that would go a long way if they were willing to highlight that to kind of show people exactly why this guy is such a big star, and also add a little more sizzle to the match if you highlight that these two have a history together. But the idea of a sit-down interview, I think, is actually a good idea.
It's an interesting set of invisible, unwritten rules. Maybe they're written somewhere. I haven't seen them, about how you're allowed to acknowledge the New Japan as a promotion. They can say IWGP Championship, but they won't say New Japan. They'll talk about Japan accomplishments, but not really cite them specifically. I understand to a degree why there's a 3.5-decade history of Vince McMahon being very selective in what he'll specifically acknowledge and not. You can talk about ROH, but not TNA. Speaking of TNA, Rockstar Spud appearing on 205 Live at this very moment with his new name, Drake Maverick. Oh. So I think Daniel Bryan's about to announce him as the new GM, so that's interesting, but I can't listen in because we're doing the show, but we'll watch later. So this might be a time to rethink that a little bit with the stakes being what they are at WrestleMania. I don't think they're going to get permission from New Japan to air footage, but certainly there's photographs from magazines, you know, that are owned by the press in Japan where they could show some big moments in Nakamura and pay a little more specific, give a little more specific information on what a truly big star he is. And I think one of the things they can spend a couple weeks doing, they certainly did this with Jinder Mahal and they've done it with Great Khali, is have him in Japan out and about, you know, getting media attention for this win. Make it seem like this is a really big deal in Japan, that he's going to be headlining WrestleMania.
Yeah, and you hit on a great point there. I think they're really missing the boat if they don't do what you were just saying. So, for example, having him go back to Japan, filming people, like seeing him on the street, what a big deal he is, running up to him, wanting to get pictures and autographs and stuff. But also, one of the reasons I really wish they would at least be willing, and maybe they will, but one of the reasons I wish they would be willing to delve into his history, I think there's a great story there that benefits WWE, because this guy left a very lucrative, very nice career for himself in his home country to come to WWE. And that's a story I'm kind of surprised they don't want to tell. This guy was a big, big deal, and he left that all behind. It was a huge unknown. It was a big risk for him to leave all that behind, and he's not a young guy. For him to come to WWE, to come to the States, and maybe find some of that success. And so far he has, and they haven't really told that story. So I think, you know, if I'm them, that's a story that makes me look good, because he left all of that to come work for my company. And I think it also helps give a little more insight into who he is for the people who aren't really familiar with his background.
Jason in Australia, we'll go back to you for either follow-up or another question if you have one.
Well, I guess the question is then, ultimately, who goes over in the match?
Good question. I won't have a strong opinion on that at this until I see what they do with Nakamura for the next 6 to 8 weeks, because there's a chance Nakamura ends up cold during this, and it turns out he's not a great fit for WWE and their style of doing things, or he gets red hot, and you're kind of like, man, I think you want to – I mean, I don't want to take the title off of AJ except for really good reasons. But if he just takes off, Jason Solomon, what is there – you know, do you think a wait-and-see attitude makes sense at this point?
Yeah, I do. I think you can wait and see and see kind of which way the wind blows with the crowd and how the fans are feeling about it. I could go either way. I'm fine. If they wanted to keep the belt on AJ, I'm okay with that. I think it would benefit Nakamura more. So for example, I don't look at AJ as somebody who needs a championship. I think he's sort of in that rarefied air where he's going to be a big star. People are going to like him, love him, whether he's got a belt or not. Nakamura, I think, maybe needs it a little bit more, because thinking ahead, if he doesn't win, where does he go from there? I think it puts him in a very weird spot, because he's going for the championship. If that doesn't work, I don't know what you do with him beyond that. So you can put the title on him, and you could have a situation where, look, if these guys go to WrestleMania in New Orleans and they tear the house down, they have a classic match, they could trade title wins back and forth for the rest of the year. You know, it could be a situation where we could get a classic series of three or four pay-per-view matches, and maybe they trade wins back and forth. So I think you take a wait-and-see approach, but I think Nakamura would benefit a lot more from a win at Mania than AJ would.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jason in Australia, any final question or comment for us?
Yeah, I think Nakamura would win the match, and then you either set yourself up for, you know, a couple of pay-per-views. They might do a best of three or whatnot, depending how the match goes. But then also I think you've got to think about, you know, more than likely after WrestleMania, they do a superstar shake-up, and perhaps AJ Styles gets drafted over to Raw and goes for the Universal Championship. So, you know, they've got a lot of options there.
Good point. Yeah, the superstar shake-up can certainly change things. Jason in Australia, good to hear from you. Thanks for giving us a call.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, you bet. I don't want to take a moment to thank everybody listening for finding us here on this new feed. We have been the number three podcast in Apple Podcasts all day today in the sports and recreation category. Still looking to leapfrog Bill Simmons. You know, just once I'd like to see us in front of Bill Simmons. But hey, we're right there in the top three with him today with all these new signups. So really appreciate all of you following us over from our blue brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which, by the way, will feature Todd Martin from The Fix on the Thursday edition this week. And then John Piermarini, ex-WWE creative team member. I've interviewed him many times on the show, and I'm curious to get his perspective on how WWE has changed and the results of this year's Royal Rumble, which he watched, and just talk more Royal Rumble later this week and also get some insight from him on his time in WWE behind the scenes for the Royal Rumble, and more insights into that company. So join us for Interview Friday, another ex-WWE creative team member later in the week. Those shows not on this feed. Remember, we've got two feeds now. These two shows, Post Raw and Post SmackDown, are on the red brand, the red logo, and then the other two shows, the Thursday flagship and Interview Friday, are on the blue logo, the Podcast One feed that most of you still have on your phones. Just hit refresh on that other feed later this week. All right, let's go to a break. We're going to come back and talk to an on-site correspondent, and this is going to be fun. This is a correspondent who is in Qatar, who's from Qatar, but has been in the United States as a student for a while, traveled from Orlando to this mega weekend in Philadelphia. He also traveled to Raw 25 last week, and he'll give his perspective on a mega weekend. We'll focus on SmackDown, but get his thoughts on what the highlights are for the whole weekend. Don't forget, we have our VIP sale going on right now. If you haven't gone VIP, you are missing out. By the way, thank you to everybody who's gone VIP this month. We're offering that $1.99 month, $8 off our normal $9.99 monthly rate. We've taken $8 off this month to give it a try. We hope that you are enjoying it. One of the perks of being a VIP member now is that the Wade Keller Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts are ad-free and commercial-free and plug-free now. We're taking we'll miss one every now and then because it's, you know, it takes some editing, but we're editing out ads and commercials and plugs so that they're virtually ad-free and most of the time completely ad-free. And that is another perk for our valuable VIP members. And so much more comes with the VIP membership. You can see the whole list at pwtorch.com/govip. 30 years of archives of audio shows, newsletters, ad-free access to our website with our updates every day, mobile and desktop ad-free sites, and tons of VIP-exclusive podcasts throughout the week. Top-level wrestling analysts doing top-level wrestling podcasts. And you'll discover the difference when you go VIP. It'll flood your phone with a lot of options, but there's a lot of good options, and you'll never have to settle for a podcast again that isn't one of your favorites. And the way that we cover wrestling is a little different than a lot of other podcasts out there. We do come from journalistic roots, and we come at it not as blindly faithful fans, but critics who take a step back and look at some of the motivations and missteps of the companies that we cover. And I know here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, we focus on WWE, but with a VIP membership, there's so much that we cover outside of WWE and all the other news stories besides what happens on Raw and SmackDown, including post-pay-per-view roundtables like the VIP roundtable that Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and I did on Sunday night after the Royal Rumble. And when there's news breaking like the XFL, we are all over that story with a historical perspective you're just not going to find on the fan-based wrestling podcasts that populate a lot of what is out there available in Apple Podcasts. So, and also just not, it's not a wrestler perspective either, which I think is valuable. You know, we are on the outside looking in. We're not worried about getting along with our colleagues the next time we see them at a get-together. We have that distance that I think is important to calling things objectively, and a fair-mindedness and a knowledge base that I think is a perfect blend for people who like this show. I think you're going to really enjoy VIP. So go to pwtorch.com/govip and enter coupon code RUMBLE18. That's RUMBLE18 to become a PW Torch VIP member for just $1.99 for a full month. You can apply it to 1 month, 3 month, or 1 year, by the way. You get $8 off whatever sub you want. That, by the way, also includes our Royal Rumble post-pay-per-view roundtable podcast feed, dating back to, I think it's 2005. So you can get the last dozen or so Royal Rumble post shows. And I mean, I hosted each and every one of them. I think Bruce Mitchell's been part of every one of them, and a mix of co-hosts of Todd Martin and Pat McNeil and others. So check that out. It is a pretty cool thing to have on your phone when you can listen to our post-Rumble roundtables dating back. And these are night of event. These aren't looking back. Actually, it goes back to 2004. I just looked it up. We also have the Wayback Playback special Rumble editions looking at the 1997, the 2000, and the 2000 Royal Rumbles with real-time multi-hour commentary on those. So check that out, pwtorch.com/govip, coupon code RUMBLE18. We'll be back right after this with our on-site correspondent. All right, we're now joined by our on-site correspondent, Wahab, who attended in Philadelphia tonight. Wahab, thank you for joining us today and talking about your on-site experience.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Excellent. First of all, I think you mentioned in your email that you also went to the previous three events. So what brings you to all four events in a row in Philadelphia? I know that you said you're a...
I actually went even to Raw 25 in Barclays, so it's going to be five events in about 10 days, you know? Something, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, are you just in the States now? You said you can give a perspective as somebody from outside the United States. Where are you from?
I am from Qatar. I don't know if you guys know where that is, but it's in the Middle East, so yeah. I am here in the States for studying. I'm actually in Orlando studying, and I had free time, so I don't get usually chances to go to WWE events. You know, back home we don't have any events, and if there is any event, it's just like a simple house show. So once I can and I have time to go to events, I try my best to do it, because you never know, I might not get the chance again to go again. So that's why I try to do it.
All right, well, I want to focus mostly on SmackDown, but I got to ask you, what is the highlight to this point of all five shows, and what has been what's the individual highlight, and then what's been your favorite event to attend?
Favorite event for me, it was Rumble, because I always like to go for there to surprise myself with the people who are entering. But I'm gonna say the highlight is the NXT Takeover. The last match was very, very good, and I think it's a highlight of the whole weekend. It was an amazing match. Yeah.
I am not surprised by either answer. that was an incredible match, and to be in that building for that kind of passion that the fans had as that match just took them on a roller coaster ride, and having such a true babyface and Johnny Gargano in that situation fighting to try to win, and I mean that just had to be exhilarating to be in that building and part of that crowd for that match.
Yeah, it was an amazing night. The NXT Takeover card was very good. I think NXT is presented and done in way, way better ways than Raw or SmackDown is. So I look forward for when Triple H is taking over all the other stuff.
How was the NXT crowd different than, say, the Rumble crowd or a Raw and SmackDown crowd? Did it seem like the same fans reacting in the same way? Does it feel like the same fans reacting in a different way? Or did it seem like a different set of fans in a lot of ways?
So I would include Raw 25 and Rumble and NXT TakeOver to say the majority was males and teens, or maybe people from age of 20 to 35. But Raw yesterday and SmackDown today are mostly kids and families. So that's the major difference, I would say, between all these events. NXT was very, very hardcore fans. I see that many people are wearing the Bullet Club shirts, and all of the NXT stars are represented there. But once, like today in SmackDown, even though John Cena is not there, most people are wearing Cena's merchandise. So it's more like a kids and family thing than rather than hardcore wrestling fans.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's talk about SmackDown tonight. Jason Solomon is with me still. Jason, why don't you kick things off with a question for him on his experience at SmackDown?
Yeah, Wahab, I had a question about the crowds. You know, you were just talking to Wade about that. You were at all the different shows. It seemed to me, you know, coming across on TV tonight, like the crowd was not as energetic as it has been the last few days. I mean, did you get that same vibe in the building? Was it a case where you just maybe felt that after all these days of action, they were sort of exhausted? Or how do you feel about that?
Kind of, because I don't think that the crowd today was the same as the one who came for Rumble and NXT TakeOver. I actually sat in a section. I was speaking with a couple of people there, and they were not attending these events. They were just here for SmackDown. Some of them didn't even want to go to Raw or Royal Rumble or NXT. So it's a different crowd. So it's not like they're going to be tired of watching wrestling. It's like it's not the same type of people who are attracted to these shows. That's what I think. And another thing probably is that not many of the talent that's working on SmackDown, everyone is invested in. That's why the crowd just don't care about some matches. That's the reason you don't hear them or you don't interact with the match.
How did the crowd respond to Shinsuke Nakamura at SmackDown tonight, and how did that compare to the reception he got when he won the Rumble?
I think on both occasions he had a very, very huge positive response. But I would say in the Rumble it was more of in the moment, since he's paired with Roman. And once he eliminated Roman, he got even more positive response. Compared to today, he's like, okay, we know he won. And I think it's like just a positive response for a huge star compared to the Rumble. Yeah.
And how did that compare to how AJ was received?
I would say AJ and probably Brian were the top two today when fans' reaction when AJ came out, or when Brian popped on the screen, and he also came out in the beginning of 205 Live. They were the top positive reactions, I would say.
Oh, very good. All right, and how did what kind of reception did Charlotte get coming out to the ring? Did she tonight get a superstar reaction or something a notch lower than that?
I think Charlotte is getting this reaction because she's very talented, but at the same time she's associated with Ric Flair, and like when you go to any event, the woos are everywhere. So this is the reason that Charlotte gets even a more positive reaction. So I think Charlotte has got a very, very good response today. I don't know how it came out across on TV, and I know that when she came out, then they went to commercials, so I'm not sure what was there and what was not.
Jason, do you have another question for
him? I'm more curious, you know, you mentioned 205 Live a little while ago. I mean, we haven't really had the chance to watch that yet, but just in terms of some of the developments on that show tonight, obviously they were announcing a new GM. I mean, can you shed a little bit of light about what happened there and how the crowd responded to that?
Yeah, 205 Live was an experience because it's half of, I would say 20% of the arena just stayed for it. And honestly, I didn't know who the general manager was when he came out with his new name. And then someone just pointed out that he was Rockstar Spud. So I didn't even know him once he was there. And everybody was like, I was expecting someone with more star power to, you know, get the energy flowing with this brand. Yeah, it was a very, very low attendance for that show. I'd say maybe 20% of the stadium stayed for it.
Wow, that is yeah. not good.
What, not good.
Of the 20% who stayed, did they know who Rockstar Spud was, at least by sight, more than you did?
I didn't get a feel of it because he came with Brian, so everybody was happy when Brian was there.
Sure.
And once Brian left, I saw people just leave their seats. They didn't even wait until he finished his promo. So yeah, I heard the Elite Champs when they were wrestling the match. Nobody was interested in the cruiserweight division.
Oh man, poor 205. Well, Rockstar Spud's talented. He's got a good. He's a good promo, and if you haven't seen him before, it might be a letdown, considering that on SmackDown they were talking about maybe Eric Bischoff or Vicky Guerrero or Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be a guy that, 80% of the people haven't heard of, and maybe 10% who know him didn't recognize him. So it'll be interesting.
Because they changed his name, so they would not recognize him. Of course, they changed his name. Nobody knew him from the beginning. He was wearing a suit. You would not recognize him as if you haven't. If you're in the crowd, you probably would not recognize him as much as maybe on TV if the camera was very close to him. So yeah, that's another reason.
Yeah, and Shinsuke is the only rock star in SmackDown, so they couldn't even reference his old name. Drake Maverick.
Of course.
I think Drake Maverick works, so I like that name. I think. Good first impression. Anything stand out from? We haven't seen the show, so we can't ask specifics other than I had it on the background a little bit. But anything else from 205 Live worth mentioning before I quiz you on SmackDown a little more?
No, I didn't think it was worth mentioning. Probably that maybe next time I would not even stay for it. I was not excited with it at all.
Was there a dark match afterwards, a non-televised main event that they used to try to keep people?
They advertised the dark match. I think somebody told you maybe on yesterday's show about it. So they were it was AJ versus Kevin Owens and Bryan as a referee.
Yep.
But that even didn't happen. They didn't do the dark match.
Wow.
After the 205 Live finished up, they said thank you and they didn't even get the dark match.
Man, so people who remember that yesterday.
Before SmackDown started, there was a match between Natalya and Naomi. But other than that, there is no dark match.
So just one warm-up match, and who won that one?
Naomi.
Okay, yeah, no surprise there. I wish WWE would clean that up, and I mean, I know they think, well, they got to see KO against AJ, so it counts, but Daniel Bryan is a special referee. If you're selling people tickets and they want to see Daniel Bryan as a special referee and one-on-one AJ Kevin Owens, then deliver what you promise. I think they should be called
out. At least tell us ahead of time that there's nothing that's not going to happen. If they told us that it's not going to happen, then maybe, maybe even more people would have left. But we don't know.
Well, right. But I mean, I can tell people that if they sign up for VIP membership, I'll give them a lifetime of, free ice cream. But that if it works and people sign up and then I go, sorry, no ice cream, that doesn't make it right.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing offer.
Yes. I think WWE should be called out for false advertising is my point. They can do better and be better than, so often doing this. And I know card's subject to change, but that's still, if your batting percentage is really low, then stop doing it. Was there anything off air tonight that stood out to you in terms of things that happened during commercial breaks that stood out to you? I know you've seen a lot of wrestling in the last week, but anything from a TV production off-camera standpoint that you think is worth mentioning to our listeners?
I kind of don't know exactly when the commercials were in some certain areas, unless they darken the whole arena and we can focus on the Titantron for any video. I'm not sure if it's it's in the commercial break or not. But I know SmackDown Live has the second screen, so even when they go to commercial during a match, sometimes the match is still on. So nothing out of the ordinary that I would say out of the top of my head.
How full was the building at the beginning of the night, and how did that compare to Raw and the Rumble, taking into account, of course, some of the seats are just not sellable because they're blocked by the stage?
Yes, of course. I would say NXT, Rumble, and Raw were pretty much full. Raw, only the 200 level, there were like, I would say, half full, but the Rumble and NXT was almost full packed. And today, the 200 level was not even available for sitting. So I would say today would be maybe half the building. I'd say even the club sections were empty today.
Okay, yeah, that's disappointing. Jason, any other questions for regarding SmackDown, I should say, regarding the content on the show?
I mean, just one. I mean, they threw it to a lot of video packages showing the Ronda Rousey stuff from the Royal Rumble. What was the general reaction when they would show Rousey? I mean, she got a great reaction in the building on Sunday, but you said earlier, you know, this was a bit of a different crowd. Whenever they would show that video package, was it a positive reaction? Were people, you know, booing or indifferent towards it?
No, they were not booing, but I would have to point out something. Yesterday on Raw, they had the Rousey thing, and they said up next. And I noticed that everybody yesterday thought that she would actually come outside and be in the stage and maybe cut a promo or something. And once they did the video package yesterday to recap what happened at the Rumble, everybody was let down. So today, nobody was paying attention to if she would even come out or something. They were more focused, I would say, on the Charlotte promo when she was mentioning Ronda as if there was something there, but nothing at all when the package was seen in the arena. Nobody was neither cheering nor booing. It was like waiting for the next thing to start.
Okay, all right. Well, what did you pay for your tickets? Where did you sit, and did you think it was a good value?
For the four nights I sat in the 100th level. The first night I was near the Titantron, so I couldn't see the entrance very well. But on yesterday and SmackDown and even on the Rumble, I was like pretty much in the middle of the screen, opposite to the camera. It depends on the show. I almost maybe $100 for every show except for the Rumble because it's a pay per view. I'd say maybe 300, something like that. I paid that much.
And just overall, as we wrap up our conversation here, are you tired of professional wrestling after this 4-day stretch and Raw 25 and ready for a break, or are you energized? And if there were two or three more shows the next two or three days, would you be excited to go to them? How do you feel about this?
Honestly, I come from a different place because I don't normally get to see these shows. Like, I might not go there for 20 years, you know. I don't know when I'm going to go for the next show. So I try, when I go there, I try to sink it all in because I usually only see it through TV. But, yeah, I'd say it's a tiring experience, of course, because it's about five wrestling events, and it was a very huge event in a matter of 10 days. So, yeah, I would say it's a very tiring. I don't think I'm going to go for any other show maybe in the next month or two. I might go for Mania if Taker's there because I would like to see his last match. But other than that, I'm not sure if I'm going to go for any event in the near future. But you don't know. Maybe when the time is right and the storyline is exciting, I might go there because, as I said, I don't get to go to these events a lot. So it depends on the situation.
How much longer will you be in the United States?
I am going to stay in the United States maybe for the next year, I would say, maybe year and a half. But I'm located in the Orlando area, so if nothing is there, I might not, you know, travel to go to that place. Philadelphia was like a two-hour flight, so I thought it was worth it. But it depends on the situation, as I said. Like, maybe if WrestleMania card was very good, I might try and make time to go there. But if it's not good, then I probably would not go.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Well, Wahab, thank you so much. Glad you're enjoying your stay here in the United States, and really appreciate you reaching out and sharing your experiences. Anything else you want to share with us about anything that surprised you about your last this experience at the pro wrestling shows that jumps out to you? And if not, we thank you for your time. But anything else you want to share?
I appreciate your calling, and I always like to give you guys' perspective from fans from other places than the U.S. because, you know, it's not the same thing as people who are, you know, very hardcore and see this product every single week. So I think it's pretty much a very good experience. I like listening to your show, and I would love to talk to you anytime if you'd like.
Excellent. We appreciate it, and stay in touch, especially if you hit another show.
Sure. Thank you, Wade.
Excellent. Thank you. We will continue to let you know when we are going to go live after Raw and after SmackDown and take phone calls. I know it's going to take a little getting used to, but as soon as Raw and SmackDown end, check out WadeKellerPostShow.com. And within 2, 3, 4 minutes of Raw and SmackDown ending, a lot of the time we're going to be taking your calls live. And you can stream the caller session live if you choose, and you can participate too. And the phone number will be on that page. You can look up when we're planning to go live and join us right after Raw, right after SmackDown for 20, 30 minutes of our live caller session, live stream with your calls. Go check it out, WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's also where you can stream and download the shows manually. But best way to get this show is by downloading it. It is our red feed. We have a red feed and a blue feed. The first two shows of the week are on the red feed with our red logo. You just search Wade Keller and subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts or wherever you else you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts. And then the last two shows of the week are at Podcast 1 on our blue feed. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast 1 is also available in Apple Podcasts. Just search Wade Keller. You can also find it on the Podcast 1 app or at podcast1.com. But there are two feeds, two shows each. Subscribe to both. They're both free. Or better yet, as I mentioned earlier, go VIP for $1.99 and find out what you're missing and get all of our podcasts ad-free and plug-free. All the VIP shows are ad-free and plug-free. And the PW Torch livecast 7 days a week. VIP members get the ad-free edition of that program. The commercials and ads are taken out. That's a big perk. Yesterday, Pat McNeil's program looked at the top seven wrestlers to ever come out of NXT. And Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net was Pat McNeil's guest co-host on that program. So if you missed that, check it out. It's at pwtorchlivecast.com. Or even better, just search PW Torch. That's PW Torch in Apple Podcasts to get that program. And that also livecast feed also includes Sunday night's post-Rumble live call-in show with Greg Parks and our Monday night MMA talk for pro wrestling fan show dedicated largely to the Ronda Rousey news. And then Wednesday nights, it's our PWT Talks NXT program. And then Thursday nights, it's a post-Impact show. Friday is the best of PW Torch livecast. Some real cool shows on that feed, linking up with some shows we've done in the past after big pay-per-views and big episodes of Raw, and also some big-name interviews. Definitely worth checking that out. And then Saturday, it's the Deep Dive with Rich Fan, where he goes in-depth on a single topic. It's educational, sometimes academic in a good way, and it's a learning experience, and it'll make you think. Rich just does a great job with that. And every Sunday night, Greg Parks hosting Wrestling Night in America. So check out the livecast feed. PW Torch is what you want to search to subscribe in Apple Podcasts. In fact, for a short span of time, we had three shows in the top 100 iTunes sports category today. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, our red logo. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, the blue logo from Podcast One. And the PW Torch livecast feed. All in the top 100 today for a while. So that was pretty cool to see. All right, well, we got more with Jason Solomon, the mailbag segment coming up. So stay tuned for that, everybody. All right, we are back for the next segment here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And I'm still with Jason Solomon of Solomonster Sounds Off. Jason, talk about your podcast and how people can find it and what kind of subject matter you cover in terms of pro wrestling.
Yeah, I cover the all the key news in the wrestling world every single week. Obviously, a lot of WWE, NXT, some New Japan, some Impact, a little bit of everything. It's a once-a-week show every Sunday, but we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster, with a lot of bonus content. I have a Royal Rumble review up right now that's up to the tune of over 600,000 views, which is kind of crazy. So you can find a whole bunch of bonus content there on YouTube as well.
That's crazy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's tackle some other topics from SmackDown tonight. We had Charlotte reacting to the news of Ronda Rousey, Asuka winning, and Ronda Rousey showing up. How do you think Charlotte did in terms of carrying herself like a star and just kind of reacting to the shakeup in the division that she's in with the arrival of Rousey?
I really wasn't a fan of that segment tonight, and I think part of it also was just the very, I thought, the tepid crowd reaction. I thought this crowd was largely very subdued for much of the show, for whatever reason, in particular during that segment. So, I mean, she carries herself well. I mean, she certainly comes across, I think, as a star. I just didn't think this was one of her best nights. And even when the Riot Squad came out, they had a little back and forth. They beat her up. Even before the Money in the Bank tease with Carmella, it just felt like a very dead segment. So I really wasn't overly impressed by what they did with Charlotte and the women tonight.
Yeah, I would like it a little more than you did. I thought that Charlotte carried herself like a star who is holding the championship and is the center of the division. I would have liked a little more about Ronda Rousey, but I think by her not talking a lot about Rousey, I think that, I mean, she said, you know, she brought up her name and she said, you know, I'm walking into WrestleMania as a women's champion. And the question is, who will be opposite of me? And then that's when the Riot Squad interfered. So they kind of cut her short before she could go too deep into it. To me, that sort of indicates they either don't want to heat up that match yet because it's not, they want to take their time on it, or that's not the match that's going to happen. And there's all kinds of talk. Oh, it'll be Ronda and a special partner against Stephanie and Triple H at WrestleMania because Hunter and Stephanie are going to want to get in the Ronda Rousey match. They're not going to want to give that to somebody else. Or it could be Asuka and they'll save Charlotte for another time. What's your take on that? What's your prediction on that? And also, do you think what Charlotte did tonight gives any insight into that?
I don't think it gave too much in the way of insight, and I think that was on purpose. I think they still want to keep things vague. And perhaps they're still not 100% on what they're going to do, but I would be shocked if it was anything other than a mixed tag, because I don't really see another role on the show for Triple H. And if you don't think Triple H is going to have his obligatory WrestleMania match, you haven't really been paying attention. So I think that probably is where things end up. And I think it's smart because we don't know, you know, how Ronda is going to be. You know, that will likely be her first match. I can't imagine her ending up, you know, for example, in the Elimination Chamber or anything like that. I would think they would save it for Mania. And I think putting her in a tag match protects her a lot and is smart. I could see her in The Rock or her in maybe even somebody like Braun Strowman if they want to give the rub to somebody on the current roster up against Triple H and Stephanie. That would be my prediction if I had to make one.
Do you like that match?
I do. I mean, again, I really personally, I don't care to see Triple H on the Mania card every year. The way they sort of shoehorn him in there, I'm just, you know, beyond that at this point. But I do like the idea of, you know, putting her in there with a partner where she has sort of limited time in the ring, where you can almost build anticipation to her tagging in and doing a couple of big spots. And here's the thing, though, you know, we've seen so many instances, I think, of Stephanie on television sort of browbeating people, literally slapping people. And we hear a lot of complaints about that. Oh, nobody ever gets one over on Stephanie. I think Ronda will be the person to finally get one over on Stephanie. You can make the argument, well, you know, Ronda isn't a traditional member of the roster. It should be somebody else. But hey, you know, we've been told that Ronda's going to be full time going forward. She's all in. And I think it's, you know, we're more than overdue for Stephanie McMahon to get her comeuppance in some sort of head to head situation. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. And the other reason, if she really is going to stick around for a while, if she is quote unquote full time, whatever that means, then there's going to be plenty of time to build to singles matches with Charlotte, with Asuka, with Sasha and other people. I wouldn't want to sort of blow all of that right out of the gate. So I think a mixed tag actually makes a lot of sense.
Is there any way, I mean, we're getting off SmackDown a little bit here, but is there any way that they can portray Ronda Rousey taking in against Stephanie as anything but an absurd mismatch? Like, that's the, I mean, I understand that the money is going to be in, yeah, Ronda's going to knock out Stephanie and it's going to be wonderful and joyous and she'll finally sell for someone, of course. Of all people in the world, of course you're going to sell for Ronda. That doesn't make up for all the other no-selling, including towering in her needlessly high heels on Raw on Monday over Asuka and Alexa Bliss. It's just like, lower those heels a little bit. Vince McMahon did not stand on a pedestal to make Andre the Giant look short.
Right.
You don't need
to. Well, actually, you know, I mean, I could be wrong on this. I mean, I did hear stories that he would sometimes stand on a box when he was interviewing Andre.
I heard it was the other way around, that Vince would get shorter in order to make Andre look taller.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, someone tell us who's right.
Yeah, we'll have to investigate this.
Yeah. But I tell you what, if Vince was trying to sell Andre the Giant as a giant, he would not have stood on something tall enough to make him look a lot taller than Andre. I mean, it's like Asuka and Alexa Bliss especially look like Rockstar Spud out there next to her. But anyway, yes, my original question quite a ways back there is, how do you present Stephanie and Ronda Rousey against each other? Is the only way to do it being Stephanie's against it, and but she got backed into it, or Stephanie's delusional and she's about to be taught a message? They can't possibly let Stephanie get in any offense against Ronda, notwithstanding how Ronda looked the last two fights. I still don't think that's enough for Stephanie to seem like a credible opponent for even 2 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, smoke and mirrors, and there's always little tricks and ways they can get around it. I mean, I kind of envision it as being whoever the male partners are will kind of take the lion's share of the match. And they'll work some spots in there where maybe Ronda gets in and she's distracted or something happens and Stephanie can sort of rake the eyes. You know, she can cheat and do stuff like that. Obviously, in a head-to-head battle, she's not going to get – I mean, it would be completely preposterous for her to get any sort of real offense in on Ronda. But you could always work, you know, little spots in there where she cheats and then runs away, tags, you know, Hunter back into the ring. So I think her exposure at Mania will, you know, in the ring will end up being fairly limited. But in the end, she wins. I mean, to me, the only outcome that makes sense would be her submitting Stephanie in an armbar. And that gets the big reaction. And I think if they want people to kind of cheer for her and get behind her and you know, if they don't want her to be the heel, that's sort of the way you need to work it. You know, you pick your spots with her. You give her the big win in the end. Everybody hates Stephanie. So, of course, people would cheer. I would hope, you know, people would cheer for Stephanie being tapped out. And she gets the big reaction and the big win. And then you're sort of off to the races. And from there, you graduate to real competition. And then you put her in situations where, you know, she's got to sort of sell a little bit of offense. That's going to be very interesting. You know, when you put her in there with somebody like Asuka, for example, Asuka's been undefeated for 2.5 years, booked to look like a monster. If you put Ronda and Asuka in there together, I mean, how much does Ronda sell? I mean, what, you know, how much do you want her to show weakness, I guess, in a match like that? That's, I think, going to be the bigger question when we see her in those one-on-one situations.
Oh, it is. I mean, that was a question with Goldberg. It's a question with Brock Lesnar. It's a question with anybody who's undefeated and has that killer, unstoppable gimmick. At what point do they sell, and against whom, and under what circumstances? But if she's full-time, she's got to eventually do that. I have heard from some people who have been around Ronda and her training that they love her. She's got a great attitude. She's enthusiastic. We also had Sasha Banks, and I think I heard Nia Jax, too, come out and make some comments. I'm told that's legit, that there's some women who have not been around Ronda who are upset and jealous. I'm curious if that turns into an on-air storyline. But from a real-life standpoint, Jason, should any of these women see Ronda's arrival as a threat or her as leapfrogging undeservedly to get the spotlight, or should they see this as raising the water level for the entire division and they will get their fair share?
Yeah, you know, to hear you say that you're hearing that it's legit is actually really disappointing and kind of shocking to me. I was sort of holding out hope that it was just a case of them either A, all being told, hey, go ahead and sort of, you know, pretend that you're upset by this and post on social media. It almost seemed too convenient that they all came out with these types of comments at the same time. We heard from Sasha, even Alundra Blaze I saw chimed in. We had Nia, Dana Brooke, Sasha. It sort of looked like a concerted effort. And then on the flip side, I thought, well, if it isn't, hopefully they're just being smart from a business point of view, and they're just angling for a match with her at some point. If it is legit, I can't just help but shake my head. And it reminds me of stories that were around when The Rock first came back and they were building to that match with Cena in Miami. And there were stories that some of the, you know, the male talent on the roster were upset because they felt like Rock was taking a spot away from them on the WrestleMania card. And I was just flabbergasted by this. I'm just thinking to myself, it's The Rock, you know?
I know.
I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, whose spot is he really is he taking a spot from Dolph Ziggler, you know, in the main event? You have the biggest box office attraction in the world. WrestleMania is all about attractions. It's just, yeah, I don't know, for people who are in the quote unquote business, you would think they would be a little smarter, I guess, and a little more hip to how these things are supposed to work. Ronda's a huge attraction. I think WWE would have been foolish to turn her down. They're heading into their, you know, biggest show of the year. If they really are that upset, frankly, I think they just need to get over themselves.
Yeah, and learn about the business, you know,
right.
And ask some people who maybe know more than you do. Is this a good or bad thing? Because I will say it, and I think some of it's a work, but I think there are legitimately, because we've seen it before. I mean, CM Punk wasn't joking, and I heard he was saying it behind the scenes, and people were trying to talk him out of it, just saying, I get what you're coming from, but the reason the WrestleMania brand means what it does is because people who become big stars in pro wrestling or outside of pro wrestling are lured onto WrestleMania as special attractions. It's what sets WrestleMania apart. It's why it does big numbers compared to other shows, and they can fill stadiums. And your day will come if you play the game, and you'll be that star someday.
Right, and again, the difference, I think, between Ronda's situation and, let's say, somebody like The Rock when he first came back, you know, Rock came back for one match. He left for a very long time, came back for another match, so he would come and go. If we are to believe, you know, the stories from ESPN and all these different places, Ronda, once her movie is done filming, she's going to be quote-unquote all in, whatever that means. Again, I don't know if that means live events or what. I think that would be kind of ridiculous because I almost feel it would water her down. But think about this. I mean, if she's in and it's not just a one and done type scenario, all of these other women like Sasha and Nia, these are potential pay-per-view matches with Ronda down the road where you'll have these one-on-one matches. They'll make a lot of money. It's almost inconceivable to me for just to think that they're that upset that why wouldn't you want to build Ronda up initially as the biggest thing in the world, because it's going to come back around to you at some point. And you'll get to make money and work a big match with her down the road.
I agree. All right, something much less important, but on my mind tonight, and I know Jeff Andrews wrote this in his column for PWTorch.com on the top three developments on SmackDown. Jeff Andrews wrote, regarding the new cartoonish graphic and text animations, they were not good. The jailhouse door animation for the Usos promo was particularly bad. I thought even worse was Daniel Bryan's delivery of overexcited delivery of the top 10 thing, but we can maybe get to that. But the graphics, it's WWE felt orchestrated and overly produced enough with everyone pointing at the WrestleMania sign, Ronda Rousey making sure she's facing the hard camera awkwardly while trying to look at others in the ring. All you know, the stupid going to somebody on their cell phone for no apparent reason, and then, oh, look, somebody walks in to make this interesting. Who could have figured that? All these things. And now they've added to it. We know what they're going to say before they say it. Or this was taped a lot earlier and there's somebody adding Batman graphics. Pow, bang. Like it. I was just shaking my head. They're trying between this and the selfie promos, Jason. I think they're trying way too hard to be cool. And I think it's backfire. I think it's going to backfire. I think it's annoying. It's kind of in the realm of going to the crowd reaction shots, the big thing that they introduced last year. I hope this goes away. This is not what sells wrestling tickets. It's not what gets people engaged in the product. It's a sense of authenticity to what's happening and a sense that it's unexpected. This just makes everything feel almost Blue's Clues-like with all these graphics and everything seeming orchestrated. Your thoughts?
Well, just for the record, I was a big fan of Adam West as Batman. Back in the 60s. But
you
I
were not alive back in the 60s.
I was not, but there's this little thing called VHS and DVD.
Well,
and
you said you were a fan of him back in the 60s, and I'm like, wait a second. You could be a fan of him in the 80s watching reruns. That's what I
Well,
what I
the,
know
the incarnation of Batman that he portrayed back in the 60s.
There we go.
I sort of grew up on that and tapes of that. So, yeah, but I think that's a concept that should be left in the 60s. I don't think it works here on SmackDown. Look, they had brand new graphics on Raw last night, and I actually thought it freshened the look of the show a little bit. I like that. And I will never fault them for trying something new because God knows that, you know, that's something they should be doing more of and trying to be a little more innovative and incorporate new concepts into their shows because a lot of what they do feels very dated and sounds very dated. This did not work. This was, I thought, a fail. Worth trying, maybe. Honestly, I think it's something that'll probably fizzle out after a few weeks. They try new things like this occasionally, and then it sort of disappears one day, and I'm kind of hoping that this is one of those concepts. The one thing I like, and I hope they'll sort of just tweak it but not get rid of it, I don't like the sort of handheld social media promos we've been inundated with lately, where they're holding a phone in their hand and talking into the phone. I mean, that works for the mixed match challenge stuff because that they're pushing social media. I get that. I actually thought the Usos backstage promo before they came out to the ring was very well done. It was a little bit different. They weren't the ones filming their own promo. They were in the back being shot as they were sort of walking to the ring. But it almost had sort of an old school production vibe to me. It's not something they've done a whole lot of in recent years. I'd like to see more of that sort of backstage promo type stuff. But yeah, the graphics and sort of, putting the words on the screen before we hear them say it, it didn't work. And I think it'll end up probably going the way of the dodo before long.
Yeah, the selfie promos, it's like people take selfies because they don't have a camera crew following them around.
Right.
You know, it's not.
Just the idea last night of John Cena filming his own promo as he's walking through the backstage area, it was just completely ridiculous to me. So whatever. Look, I mean, they could try new things. I'm all for it. But hopefully they watch it in execution. And like you and I, they realize how ridiculous it looks.
Well, I hope that somebody just trips and falls doing that, and then just have it happen live. Like, have someone doing a selfie video, film them falling over something. Because, I mean, obviously we don't want anyone to get hit by a bus in real life, but people fall all the time, you know, looking at their cell phones, crossing crosswalks, and that kind of thing. So it's dangerous. It's a liability. That alone should be a reason not to do it, besides the fact that it looks like you're trying way too hard to be cool and trendy. It's
So you're advocating for insurance purposes, they should cease and desist.
I will come up with any reason I can to get them to cease and desist because it's just a little too cute. Fatal 4-Way for the U.S. title, Bobby Roode on commentary. I keep waiting for Bobby Roode to do something that impresses me in terms of getting across his personality, and there's still just not a lot there. Is it just, first of all, do you agree with me? And number two, is he just going to be better off turning heel? And then three, is Rusev Day maybe a way to do a official double turn?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about the double turn aspect of it. I definitely think that could work, and I agree. I think it's the whole dynamic of him being a babyface. I was confused when they first called him up as a babyface. It just didn't seem to fit. I was really a big fan of his work in NXT as a heel. I was thoroughly entertained by his back and forth with Roderick Strong in NXT. I don't know if you remember any of that, but he would come out sort of mocking his promo style. We had these great packages of Roddy and learning about his family and his wife and his kid. And I remember Roode coming out and fake crying, and he was great. He just seemed a lot more natural in that role. And then all of a sudden he gets called up and he's a babyface, probably, I'm guessing, entirely because of the music. It's just one of those gimmicks. The music is such that they feel people can just start chanting it and singing it. But I definitely think he's miscast in that role. He's pretty boring and very vanilla. But I think if we get to see some of that NXT version of Bobby Roode, that's the version of Roode that I've been waiting for. I'm all for a double turn. I look, one of the best things I thought about this show tonight was the fact that Rusev got the win in the four-way. They're actually doing something, at least for 1 week, with Rusev. They're hopefully going to capitalize on this newfound popularity that he has. I think Rusev is fantastic. Yeah. I think he's one of the most charismatic guys they have on that roster. And so I'm all for anything that gets him more TV time. And if that means a double turn, then hey, I'm all for it.
I'm with you. I mean, they got something here. There's just sometimes wrestlers out, you didn't plan for it, but you have to embrace it and go with it. And if they wait too long, it'll dissipate. It happened with Daniel Bryan on a much larger scale in those tag matches with Kane and the Shield, and it was just the summer of Daniel Bryan, and it happened organically. It was not something, and that can work against you sometimes. I know Taz has talked about, I think it was on one of his first podcasts, he said when he walked out at MSG the first time in WWE and got a big pop, somebody told him, pulled him off to the side and told him, you're doomed, because now Vince McMahon can't take credit for making you because you were over when you got here. So whatever game Vince has to play and that whole team before they can justify pushing Rusev and getting behind him, then, you know, don't wait too long is what I'm saying. Go with it, and the fans love him, and give him. And I thought what I liked tonight is it wasn't like the Rusev Day thing is fun. I mean, it is fun. It's more fun than pancakes for me, by far. And yet I want to see, and we say this with Shinsuke, there's a time for fun and games, but there's a time to put on that serious face and look like this is a that this is your profession and you want to be the best at it. And I like the demeanor that he had after he won, walking up to Rude like that and shooting him that look and saying, I want that title. It's not all about yucking it up with Aiden English singing behind you. So this was a step in the right direction. But, I mean, these house show matches where whoever is, you know, Rusev's what, teaming with Jinder and someone else against New Day at house shows and stuff. It's like, I don't want to be the babyface opposite of Rusev right now because the fans don't just love chanting Rusev Day. They love him. They have a connection and affection with him. WWE needs to exploit that. And so, yeah, I think a double turn would be good for Bobby Roode, too, because he's just so bland right now.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, again, I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned it, but it's kind of perfect because I think they both would benefit from switching roles. And now we're going to get that match next week on TV. I don't know if they do it there, if they want to, you know, delay it a little bit. But I think swapping roles would do both guys a world of good.
Yep. All right, Jason, thank you so much. Great conversation.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Excellent. VIP members, stay tuned because Jason and I are about to tackle emails. We're going to go into the mailbag. We got to get this show, the free show, off to our producer to get loaded as quick as possible. Because remember, the turnaround time on these shows, I want to make them faster than they had been the last 6 months when we were doing the post shows at Podcast One. And I think you'll value that turnaround time. You can hit refresh sometimes and hear the show before you go to bed for the night if you're in the United States and get them earlier elsewhere in the world. So Jason is going to stick around. He's agreed to do that for the mailbag segment, and we'll spend 20, 30 minutes answering a bunch of good email questions. And like I said, we got some rants in the mailbag this week about the graphics and some other things. So stay tuned for that, VIP members. That'll be posted separately as a VIP after show. If you're not a VIP member, here's your last chance to get that discount, that $8 off. It's $1.99. If you like what we do here and you want to support us, we give you a lot in return for that support with your VIP membership. And it's super simple. You just go to pwtorch.com/govip and then sign up. Choose 1 month, 3 months, or 1 year and take $8 off. That means a 1 month subscription begins at just $1.99 for the first month, no further obligation. Hundreds of you have done this, and we'd love for more of you to do so, hundreds and hundreds more. Take advantage of it. You get our post-Rumble roundtable, the post-NXT roundtable, my every single day Wade Keller hotline, the Bruce Mitchell audio show twice per week, the Bruce Mitchell mailbag every Sunday, The Fix with Todd Martin, who's going to be my guest on tomorrow's flagship edition of the program, the Thursday flagship edition of the program at Podcast One. Access to all my past interviews with ex-WWE creative team members, which is just fascinating. To go back and hear things that almost happened and what was supposed to happen that didn't, and stories about Vince McMahon and other creative people in that company. We've got a whole section of about 100 ex-creative team member interviews that I've conducted when you go VIP. And we're going to add to that list on Friday with a John Pierre-Marini interview, ex-WWE creative team member back in 2009-2010. We'll get his take on what he thinks of the changes since he left and what he thought of the Rumble this year and his thoughts looking ahead to WrestleMania and Ronda Rousey. He's a big MMA fan, too, so we'll talk about that connection. So should be a good rest of the week, but you'll have to refresh the other feed to get the Thursday and Friday shows, the blue feed, over at Podcast One, but available, like this show, at Apple Podcasts and just about anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Just search Wade Keller. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget to support us on Amazon. pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you shop Amazon, don't start at amazon.com. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. Check out the MMA Torch website if you want to get perspective on what's going on in the world of MMA. Updated every day with news and columns. That's mmatorch.com. For written recaps of pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts like Steve Austin and Bruce Pritchard, check out pwpodcasts.com. Written recaps of and detailed written recaps telling you what you might be missing out on podcasts that you didn't get around to listening to yet. And maybe they'll entice you to check out some other podcasts when you have time for that. If you're willing to be an on-site correspondent for a future edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, email me at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com and put the name of the city and the date in the subject line. And we might be in touch and coordinate giving you a call after the show, like we have done this week with a couple correspondents on both programs, including Wuhab Today, who joined us for a perspective on someone who attended all four shows in a row in Philadelphia. If you have any questions at all for me on any other matters, you can reach me at that email address. And if you attend a live event, send us results. It can be WWE or otherwise. ROH, New Japan, independent shows, whatever it is, the email address to send us detailed results of shows you attend, as much detail as you want, pwtorch@pwtorch.com. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on both of our podcasts. Look up Wade Keller. You'll see the red logo and the blue logo. Click on both of them and give us a 5-star rating for both of them if you think we deserve it. And if you don't, drop me a line and let me know how you think we can improve. And follow me on Twitter @TheWadeKeller. Follow me on Facebook, or like me on Facebook, @WadeKellerTorch. You can like our brand on Facebook, by the way, @PWTorch. And follow us on Twitter @PWTorch. So, @PWTorch on Twitter, @TheWadeKeller on Twitter, and Facebook.com/PWTorch and Facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. Thanks, everybody, for your support. It's been a really fun week so far with more to come. And until next time, on the blue feed later this week and then next Monday back on this feed, this is Wade Keller signing off.